Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Snell Nation. Tonight, I want to talk about slavery. And yes, I know it's a refreshing topic. It's something that none of you have heard anything about, especially, you know, over the past, you know, 2-3 years. This is fresh material. I get it. But I feel like there's some fine details that are missed, some inconvenient truths about slavery. I only want to focus on two big ones for tonight. There's plenty more, tons more. But I've just noticed, of course, just, you know, I grew up through the public school system. I went through just your typical university. And had some of the standard interactions and conversations that you would have about this particular topic. And as I stated on a lot of other topics, there's always this approved narrative, approved by, well, we like to think that it's approved by society at large, you know, or it's this spectrum of conversation where you can't venture outside of it. And each time I've tried, I've been met with a lot of hostility and just a lot of negative emotion, not from everyone, not from a lot of people, but some. And even when I present, you know, what I believe to be evidence or just information that's available to the public, that's right there, that outlines a certain timeline of events in the, you know, 17th century forward, it's an immediate dismissal. You know, I get the I get the conspiracy theorists, I get the internalized racists, I get the usual stuff, the usual stick. And it still bewilders me, because those same individuals will look at this information, dismiss it immediately. Then I'll ask, well, what are your references? What are your sources? And they'll present either nothing, or they'll just, like today I had someone just tell me, well, it's just a fact. It's just a fact that, you know, the blacks that fought for the Confederacy were all force, you know, because they were all black people in the South at that time in slaveholding states, where they were all slaves. That's it, period. And all the white people in that region at that time were all slave masters and owned slaves. And I had someone just tell me that, and that's just a fact. Okay, well, you're giving me your opinion, but do you have the, like, any actual sources, something I can reference? And I usually get either nothing, silence, or I'll get a ridiculous source that's very, like, you know, there's no real weight behind it. It's like, it's usually an opinionated article, and they mistook it for something solid and factual, and not just the ramblings of some random journalist or some random writer slash editor. So, I felt that it was necessary, you know, even though, you know, we've already had our Juneteenth, quote-unquote, celebration. And, of course, if you look at Philadelphia, if you look at Atlanta, you look at Chicago, New York City, Oakland, you'll find there were a lot of shootings, a lot of black-on-black violence on that weekend and on that day. So, yeah. So it's amazing just how strong the toxicity of black culture has become, and black criminality, to the point where even when you're trying to celebrate the liberation and the end of slavery, it just seems like we just can't take a break from killing each other for some reason. But hey, you know, if the police happen to do it once or twice a year to someone who's unarmed, it's people hold up signs talking about genocide. I had someone call it a black Holocaust. And then I brought up, hey, you do know over 300,000 blacks have died at the hands of other blacks since 1976. Rough estimate. That's a low estimate, low ball, 300,000. That's not a genocide. That's not worthy of any focus or anything. But, you know, a police officer, you know, we have two or three or even nine, you know, where most of those shootings are justifiable. Well, shootings. But let's focus on those. But anyway, hey, that's that. Let me move on. Let me move on. I'm getting all sidetracked and excited here. So I wanted to focus on black slave owners. And I it's another one of those things I bring up. It's just like blacks that fought for the Confederacy that was voluntarily, they just wanted to do it. People believe, oh, that's just impossible. You bring up black slave owners. Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. That's absolutely insane. But a lot of the information is there. And of course, I present this and, you know, I get the usual labels, which I mentioned before. Or what I'll get is a quick dismissal of the source. And if I say, well, this is coming from the federal census reports available at that time from June 1860 to this time. And still, I'm still met with the same like, oh, well, that's, you know, that can't be true. Which it took me some time to understand just the human psychology when it comes to someone identifying with a group, having certain ideologies, certain things they've been taught over so many years. Once it takes hold, it becomes a part of that person's identity. So me making these statements is not just me making these statements. Me making these statements is an attack on their existence, on their entire identity, everything they've based their life on, which is why people get so emotional, excited. But I digress. So, black slave owners. So just a few numbers for you. So during that time, there were 27 million whites in the country at that time. And when I say that time, I'm talking about the 18th century, mid-1800s. And we're hovering around the Emancipation Proclamation time period. So 27 million whites in this country, 8 million that lived in slave-holding states. And as I mentioned before, the numbers that I'm throwing out there actually comes from, the federal census that was taken in the period of June 1860. That's where a lot of this information is coming from. So 27 million whites in this country, 8 million in slave-holding states. And according to that census at that time, fewer than 385,000 individuals owned slaves within those slaveholding states. Now, even if that 385K, even if they were all white, that would still amount to about 1.4% of whites in this country at that time, or 4.8% of Southern whites. Still small. And understand that, you know, yes, slavery is evil. Of course, that's common sense. But it's also something that's existed in every society since always and forever. There's always the conquered and the conqueror is the way these things tend to play out since always. So when I talk about these things, understand I'm not trying to justify. I'm just trying to provide an angle that I believe is relevant, but is constantly ignored for obvious reasons. So I shall press on. Now, you have that number as far as how many actually owned slaves, relatively small amount, which goes into something I discussed a couple of weeks ago about reparations and how nonsensical that is, trying to determine who were actually slaves, because not all blacks were slaves, and not all whites were slave masters or slave owners. So the whole reparations concept, it's quite hilarious. That so many people get behind it, but that's that. So going back to this federal census report, June 1860. So at that time, there were 4.5 million. The report I read, it kept using the term Negro, which is fine, because we still have the NAACP that uses that nomenclature, and we see it in a lot of other places. So I'm going to go ahead and roll with it. So 4.5 million Negroes in the United States. So a little less than 4 million of them resided in southern slaveholding states. And, you know, of those blacks, of that concentration, that high concentration in the South, 261,988 were not slaves. And this is a fact that I mentioned earlier to the individual that I was speaking to or communicating with on social media. And acted as though that's just impossible. There was no way there were any free blacks in the South. It was just all a bunch of evil whites that owned a bunch of helpless, defenseless black slaves, and that's it. Well, that's not it. It's not that simple. History isn't as black and white, pun intended, isn't as black and white as the mainstream media makes it, you know, as academia likes to make it. And I'll throw out just some of my thoughts as to why so much nonsense is perpetrated and so many myths through American history are pushed and perpetrated. But I'll come to that a little later. So we've got 261,988 blacks that weren't slaves, Negroes that weren't slaves. Now, to focus on one city in particular, we have the city of New Orleans. 10,689 of them lived in New Orleans. Now, there was a study done by a African-American historian at Duke University, a professor by the name of John Hope Franklin. And he dug deep into this and he took a look at the federal census reports for that time and came to the determination that in the city of New Orleans at that time, over 3,000 free Negroes, not freed, but free Negroes owned slaves, or 28% of the free Negroes in that city. But we never want to talk about this. We want to act like this is something that's just, you know, black slave owners. No, like that's just not a thing. It was never a thing. It never happened. But it did. And in massive numbers. You know, so now when you break those numbers down and you look at, okay, well, how many slaves did these individuals own at one time? The numbers vary. What you'll see with the numbers here on average, about five slaves. And there was another just larger percentage that owned 10 or more, 50 or more. There were quite a few that owned over 80, closer to 100 slaves. And we're talking thousands of black slave owners. And one city, just one. We're not looking out that entire belt, that entire span of slaveholding states, because that number will grow exponentially. But we can't. This is something that people believe is an absolute myth. So it's there. The information is there, but it just seems like we can't talk about it. We can't be open about it, at least not without someone, you know, completely trying to trounce and slam this particular angle. Even though the information is there, the data is there, anyone can go back and take a look and verify what I've said thus far and everything else I'm going to say going forward. Just like all my other podcasts, you know, I love when people go back and take a look. But one thing that I ask is if you respond... If you respond with "you're wrong and here's why" and you provide a link and the link is to Snopes, I'm just going to laugh at you. And when you respond that, "oh, well, this is a non-biased source, Snopes," I'm going to continue to laugh at you. And then I'm going to recognize, because I'm 39 years old, been doing this a little while, I will recognize that I'm wasting my time and I will move on and not continue that discussion. So just a warning, but I love taking in all feedback and criticism. But hey, so history isn't necessarily as black and white as we've been taught, even now. In another conversation I had, this goes actually into the second piece here. In regards to myths about slavery in America, this notion that, yes, you know, or this notion that slavery was prominent here in North America, like this is the heart of it all, and it only involved whites enslaving blacks. And whenever I bring up like the Native American angle and I just say, hey, well, you do understand that there were a lot of tribes at that time that had black slaves, thousands of black slaves. They traded them and all that kind of stuff, and it was a commodity. No, that's not possible. All right. Well, if you just look up the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Cherokee, if you look any of those up and you dig just a little bit, if you look at the Trail of Tears and you dig deep into it beyond the, you know, first paragraph of the historical documents that outline what happened, you'll find those stories in there, where different individuals from, well, we'll even focus on just the Cherokee, they had their slaves with them for the Trail of Tears, and they walked right with them, and they died right with them. You know, not by choice, but they were right there. But people want to act like it's something that's just not possible, even though the information is right there. And I'll go ahead and do a quick plug here for a book. It's called Black Slaves, Indian Masters by a Barbara. Let me make sure I pronounce this last name right. It's K-R-A-U-T-H-A-M-E-R. Crothamer? And her book actually focuses on not so much the Cherokee, but on the Choctaw and the Chickasaw Indians in that particular time period, and that being the mid to late 18th century, and how they dabbled quite a bit in the human trafficking of black slaves. And there's tons of other sources for those who are actually interested in learning the truth about American history, about slavery, the legacy of slavery, as CNN and Fox News and CSNBC and all these other media outlets like to throw out there that buzz phrase, the legacy of slavery. You know, if you're really curious, it's right there. And I also have to recommend, once again, the great Dr. Thomas Sowell. He has a book entitled Black Rednecks, White Liberals. It was written some time ago, but it's incredibly relevant. It talks a great deal about a lot of culture and things that carried on from slavery forward. Another great book. You know, if you really want to learn the true history, the complete story, not the cherry picking, like, hey, we need blacks to be angry at whites, so let's just paint this one picture and ignore everything else, but this gives that whole story. Highly recommend it, because, you know, as I said before, American history is just not that simple. And I promise you, the truth is way more interesting, way more fascinating than the garbage we've been fed since childhood. So then the final question would be, or the big question would be, you know, why are things presented in this way? Why is the approved narrative what it is? You know, and to that, I'd have to say there's a great deal of money to be made in war. There's a great deal of money to be made in division. And the saying goes that wars are not meant to be won, but they're meant to last. They're meant to continue, to be continuous, to carry on, because there's money to be made. The same thing can be applied to the race industry, to division. There's a great deal of money to be made to keep everyone split up into their individual groups. It also serves as a great distraction. A nation divided, you know, a lot of people say that a nation divided shall not stand or cannot stand. Yes, I agree. But a nation divided is also incredibly easy to govern. All depending on who's in charge, who's in those leadership positions. But it's incredibly easy to govern a bunch of people that are divided, scared, and angry, constantly in a fight or flight primitive posture for years and years, constantly being fed just doses of fear and anxiety and ignorance just 24/7. Because I'm here to tell you, our mainstream media, they're supposed to inform us, but they're not doing that. You don't want an informed, healthy, confident population. You can't have that. You can't have strong-willed, focused, well-informed, confident men. You can't have truly caring, focused, confident women either. They need both genders to be incredibly immoral, incredibly lazy, and incurious and unaware to the world around them, to the point where they won't even ask the obvious and relevant questions about anything of substance. We'll just spend our time, watching TV, watching our sports, getting our fill, memorizing sports stats and things like that, who our favorite players are, who our favorite celebrities are, while meanwhile, the things that really do matter just slip under the radar. Topics like auditing the Federal Reserve, how did our tax code go from being dozens of pages to tens of thousands of pages? And, why don't we actually have term limits in Congress? Why is it that it's not even up for debate, even though it's what the people want? Like so many other things. Why is it that there are thousands of lobbyists huddled down on K Street in D.C., influencing our politicians, influencing our legislation, writing some of our legislation? We can't talk about that, but we can sit around and whine about the most ridiculous things, and people go on and on, talking about how terrible this country is and how oppressive it is. Meanwhile, they're doing this, and anyone who speaks out against them, they lose their job. Well, if they're white, conservative, male, they'll lose their job for the most part for speaking their opinion or giving their perspective on all this craziness that's going on. But the one who's doing all the shouting and all the whining, they're the ones that are oppressed? Like, how does that work? But that's where we are. It's incredibly unfortunate. But I'll say that for another podcast. But I just wanted to provide just some of my thoughts on slavery and a lot of those myths. I mean, I only focused on two, and there are dozens more. But I just encourage everyone to, as always, do your own research, ask relevant questions. Don't be afraid to, share your perspective, even if it's unpopular. I mean, I've been doing it for over 20 years. There's nothing wrong with that. Be tactful about it. Be honest. So with that, that's all I have. Please feel free to provide some feedback if you're listening to me on Apple Podcasts, any of the other platforms. Please feel free to just let me know just what you think, some of your thoughts. If you have some ideas for some future episodes, I'm happy to take those in, or a particular individual you'd like for me to talk about or try to bring on, I'm up for that as well. And if you need to find me, I'm all over, at least for right now. I'm on Instagram, and I've got my Snell Nation Facebook page, and I'm on LinkedIn and all that good stuff. I even got registered as an LLC, so hooray there. I'm not a hard man to find. And with that, Snell Nation out.